Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 187, The Basics of Brining. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that is all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. And today we're going to be tackling a fundamental technique that every home cook should at least understand the concept behind, and that is brining and using brines. Now, we'll get into all that in a minute, but if you're not familiar with what a brine is, there's a couple types. There's wet brines and dry brines, but it's essentially using salt on proteins or sometimes vegetables to cause that protein to either absorb more liquid or not dry out as much when it's being cooked in a hot and dry cooking method. It's different from a marinade, but we'll talk about that in a minute. So before we get into that, of course, a bunch of housekeeping to do first. And foremost is the show notes for this episode will be at kitchencounterpodcast.com/187. So when we get through this episode and you hear something that piques your interest and you want to learn more, or maybe you want to check out some recipes that I will be putting in the show notes, head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/187 and you'll find all that stuff. Also, if you'd like to contact me, and I love to hear from listeners, I try to answer every listener email I get. Sometimes it takes me a little while, but I try to get to each one. You can send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. And that's probably the best way to get a hold of me directly. You can also find me on Twitter at TKC Podcast or on Facebook, especially in our Facebook group, which is over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. It's called the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break. It's a private group. Great people in there always talking about food and different sorts of cooking stuff and sharing food pictures, which I know we all bore our family and friends to death with when we do that, but it's a safe place to share pictures in there. So check that out if you're a Facebook person. And I also want to mention that the Kitchen Counter Podcast is a very proud member of the Nitty Grits Podcast Network out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum down in New Orleans. Some other great shows out there. I feel like I'm the West Coast rep here because I think all of the other shows on the network so far are, Southern food related or drinks, but they're all really great. And if you want to check those out, head over to southernfood.org, which is the website for the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. And you can find information about all of the Nitty Grits podcasts there as well. You know what else I have to share? This is kind of funny. And I know most of you don't know this because you're not here when I'm recording, but I don't script my intros. Actually, I don't really script anything. I have some bullet points and stuff that I try to use to keep myself on topic, but I don't script my intros at all. And I'm not kidding. This is the, I think, 15th or 16th take of the intro that I've done. I start recording, I don't like what comes out of my mouth, and then I stop, and then I start from scratch again, and then I stop, and then I start from scratch again. I do that several times until I'm in a vibe or in a groove, and then I just talk, and then I edit later if I need to. But if you only knew. Anyway, I don't even know why I shared that, and it's actually just convincing me that I just need to roll with it and do the editing later, but anyway, here I am. It's been a while since I've been with you, so I'm out of practice. Enough rambling on. Why don't we jump right into the episode, The Basics of Brining? Apparently, I need to be better at scripting. Anyway, so let's talk about brining. And I think this is a really timely topic because at least here in the United States, at least where I'm from, here in Western Oregon, we are rolling in earnest right into grilling season and outdoor backyard cooking season. And cooking over a grill or cooking over a fire or charcoal or whatever, or gas flames, is a very dry, very hot method of cooking. And every grill jockey I know, whether they're amateurs and just starting out or have been doing it for a while, have all been guilty at one time or another, sometimes more than we'd even like to admit, of turning out food that we've cooked on the grill that is just dried out. Not juicy at all, not a drop of moisture in there. And, you know, we want to figure out ways to not let that happen. And of course, one way to do that is just to pay attention to your grill and use meat thermometers when you're cooking meats and proteins to make sure you're not overcooking and drying them out. But there are things even at that are really easy to screw up on a grill, like our old friend, the boneless, skinless chicken breast. Dry to begin with. You give it a dirty look and a boneless, skinless chicken breast will shrivel up and turn into chalk in your mouth. Most poultry is like that, actually. And even some pork can be like that, unforgiving when you're cooking over dry, hot heat. They can dry out very easily. Actually, anything you cook, you can dry out that way, right? So we're always looking for things to put in our toolkit to counter-effect or counteract some of that and, stack the odds in our favor when it comes to cooking. At least I am. I mean, if you never turn out a dry piece of food on your grill, I salute you. But for the rest of us mere mortals, there are things we can do. And I want to talk about brining primarily today. And the first thing I want to say right now is that brining is different than marinating. Marinades and marinating is a topic for a whole separate episode, which I'll probably get to eventually. But I just want to say it up front here. It's different. And I just want to make the distinction because it'll help us put our mind in the right frame of reference as we're talking about brines. So the rule of thumb when you're reading about brines and marinades, or you're listening to a podcast about them, or you're trying to figure out what to do for your next cooking adventure, you want to remember that a brine is about the moisture and a marinade is about the flavor. Now, there is some overlap between those two with one another, but primarily brine is moisture, marinade is flavor. So when you think about a marinade, you think about some of the famous ones, right? Like jerk chicken or Southeastern Asian satay or Indian tandoori. There's all of these cuisines that have these very distinct flavors that are often brought about by using a marinade. Whereas you think of a brine, there really is no ethnic brine or, brines that have some flavor profile that are unique to one culture or another. A brine is simply, at its most simple anyway, a use of salt, sometimes in water, sometimes not, to help your proteins retain moisture and add seasoning. Seasoning being different than flavor, right? Seasoning is about the salt. Flavor is about all of that other stuff that gives our food its unique palate and profile and appeal. So marinade, not a brine. Put the marinade in the back of your mind. We'll talk about that another time. So that said, I want to talk about brines because fundamentally, brining is about increasing the moisture and the seasoning of the ingredient that you're working with. I'm going to focus really on proteins here, poultry and meats, but you can also brine vegetables and fish and shellfish and things like that. I'll put links in the show notes to a ton of stuff about brining that will include those, but I don't want to focus on those too much today. Otherwise, the episode will just be too long. So I want to really focus on using brines for proteins like poultry, pork, and beef. And I want to talk about wet brining and dry brining and the difference between the two. But in general, I want to say a couple of things about brining. First, only use brining when you're looking at a dry, hot cooking method like grilling or roasting or, cooking over a fire or smoking, something like that. Moist cooking methods like braising or poaching, your brine's not going to affect it that much because it's already a very moist, wet cooking environment. Your food, your proteins are not going to dry out all that much in those sorts of environments. So there's really no reason to brine, that pork roast that you plan on slow braising in liquid. Also, brines are really, you can brine any protein, but the ones that you really, really want to take the time and really consider a brine for are the ones that do tend to dry out. I mentioned already poultry, chicken, and turkey. You know, again, turkey at Thanksgiving, people have been really on the brining train for those, so they don't end up with a dry, overcooked bird. So poultry is really a good candidate. Most pork is a great candidate, especially the leaner cuts of pork, like pork chops or pork loins or pork tenderloins. Beef can also be a candidate for brining as well, especially large cuts of beef that you plan on roasting. But regardless of the cut of meat or protein that you plan to brine, it's always a good idea to make sure that it hasn't already been treated with some sort of a saline solution or injection. You know, sometimes, well, an example actually would be here in the United States, you can get a butterball turkey. And I think the butterballs, all of them might be the same, but they're like self-basting. Well, that means they've injected them with like a saline seasoning solution, essentially already somewhat brining them. Some chicken, some pork products you find in grocery stores will be labeled that way as well. Not self-basting, but they might say they've been, you know, injected or treated with a solution of seasonings or whatever. If you're working with those, skip the brining step at home because it's already going to be plenty juicy and plenty salty enough. So now we're excited because we know that brining can increase the moisture of our protein and add seasoning. So how do we actually brine something? And I've already mentioned, you'll recall, wet brine and dry brine. Well, what's the difference with those? And do they work the same way? And all that stuff. So let me talk about wet brines first, and then we'll go and we'll talk about dry brines. The result is similar, but the method is quite different. So wet brining is when you take a solution of water and salt at its very basic, water and salt, and submerge your protein into that solution for a period of time before you cook it. That is the most simple definition of wet brining. Now, again, most simple, it's water and salt, but sometimes you can use other liquids. You can add sugar to that solution. You can even add other spices and flavoring ingredients, but just know that this is not a marinade, and it's not going to deliver you the type of flavor that a marinade would. In fact, interestingly, in a solution of water, really only salt and sugar, when it dissolves, the molecules there are small enough to penetrate your protein. The rest of those, the spices, the peppercorns, the fresh herbs, whatever that you've put in your saline solution, in your wet brine, it will make a great smelling liquid, but it's probably not going to really affect the flavor of your brined protein at all. So I would recommend just skipping that stuff and maybe sticking with water, salt, and sugar. Now, as I mentioned at kitchencounterpodcast.com/187, I'll put links to different recipes and things like that. But if you're wondering what is, if it's just water and salt, what's the ratio? What's a typical water to salt ratio that you could use to whip up a brine whenever you needed to? And I would say a general ratio would be that for every cup of water that you use, you would want to use about a tablespoon of kosher salt. So 1 tablespoon of kosher salt per 1 cup of water. And the amount of brine you might need just really depends on the size of the protein that you need to brine. So for example, if you just intend to wet brine a couple of boneless, skinless chicken breasts or maybe a couple of pork chops, you're not going to need much brine. Just a, you know, 2 or 3 cups probably in a shallow dish would do you. Now, if you're going to brine an entire turkey, you know, a 15-pound turkey, you're going to need a lot of brine and consequently a big container to put all that in, right? But you would use the same ratio of water and salt. So 1 tablespoon kosher salt per cup of water, or that is also equivalent, of course, to 1/4 cup salt for every quart of water. If you're working with larger volumes, that would be an easier way to measure it out. The other thing to keep in mind when we're talking about wet brine is not just the amount of brine that you need, but the amount of time you'll need to brine something. And again, the rule of thumb generally goes along with the size of the protein that you're trying to brine. So to use our example of a couple of boneless, skinless chicken breasts or a couple of pork chops, I mean, you can brine those in the fridge for 45 minutes to an hour and they'll be ready to go. a whole chicken or maybe a whole pork roast. Maybe you're looking at 6 to 8 hours in the fridge or overnight. And a whole turkey might take you 12 up to 24 hours. Some folks online will even tell you to do it longer than that. But it just depends on the size of the protein that you're trying to brine and how much time it's going to take. But if you're just looking to get something on the grill that evening and you got a couple of nice bone-in pork chops, thick-cut pork chops that you want to grill up, you could throw those in a quick brine in the fridge for, 45 minutes while you're getting all your side dishes put together and your grill heated up. Also, when you're making the brine, you always want to put your proteins into either room temperature or cold liquid. But the easiest way to get salt and sugar to dissolve in liquid is to put it in hot or boiling water. So what I recommend doing is taking your whole amount of salt and or sugar that you're going to put in your brine and a portion of the water, maybe a quarter of the total amount of water. Bring that water to a boil. Go ahead and dissolve the salt and sugar if you're using it in there until it's dissolved. Remove it from the heat and then add in the rest of your cool or room temperature water to bring the temperature down. You could even put in some ice cubes to really cool things down. But you want your brine to be room temperature or colder before you put your protein into it. And if you're going to be brining anything for longer than, that 45 minutes that a couple of chicken breasts or pork chops might take, you want to put that in the fridge or somehow keep the brine cold. So if you're doing a turkey for 24 hours, you either need to have a lot of fridge space or a lot of ice to keep it cold as it brines in whatever large container you've put it in. Now, I've told you what it is and how to make it generally. And again, I'll put links in the show notes for all of this, but how does it actually work? Why would, sticking a couple of chicken breasts in salty water do anything good for you other than produce salty tasting chicken breasts? Well, there is some debate on the actual science of brining, believe it or not, but fundamentally what happens is when you put that chicken breast into a salty, that saline, that brine solution, the chicken breast says, whoa, I need to equalize with the environment around me. And the environment around me is extremely salty. So I am going to have to pull in some moisture along with it, that dissolved salt, until, in theory, the levels equalize between the protein and its surrounding liquid. So not only is it pulling in water, I mean, this is the basic concept of water retention, right? So it's pulling in and holding water, and the salt that is in that water is actually affecting the protein fibers, the muscle fibers in that chicken breast. It's loosening them up. It's giving them more space to hold moisture. And what's interesting, what happens is, well, actually, if you were to weigh that chicken breast before you brine it and after, you will find that after you brine it in wet brine, it will actually weigh more, maybe, 8 to 12% by weight heavier than when it went in. And that is that extra liquid that it has absorbed and is holding, that extra water weight, if you will. So then what happens when you go to cook that chicken breast? The act of cooking tightens those muscle fibers and causes them to squeeze out moisture. So two things happen. The muscle fibers have been affected in a way that they don't squeeze quite so tight anymore, so they don't squeeze out quite as much moisture. And there was more moisture in that chicken breast to begin with. So no matter how you cook it, a brined and an unbrined chicken breast will lose the same amount of moisture if they're cooked identically. But because the brined chicken breast had more moisture, more liquid to begin with, you're going to end up with more at the end, as opposed to a non-brined chicken breast. Hopefully you followed along there. That made sense. And of course, I'm using chicken breast as a simple example, but this is the same concept with every other thing you would put in the wet brine. Now, this does bring up one very clear disadvantage to brining, and that is, yes, you may end up with, or wet brining anyway, you may end up with juicier chicken breast at the end of the day, but it might be less flavorful. It might be seasoned okay. It might be salty enough, but it might be less chicken tasting because you've diluted the natural flavor of that chicken breast with water, essentially. So that can be a trade-off. You could have a watered-down protein, even though it is juicier and maybe a little more tender. It might not quite pack the flavor punch that it would have if you did another method, perhaps dry brining, for example. So let's talk about dry brining. Now, just like wet brining, the magic ingredient in a dry brine is salt, kosher salt. But unlike a wet brine, we're not using any water. In fact, a dry brine is much more simple and a lot less messy, and generally speaking, just as effective as a wet brine. So a dry brine, essentially, so if a wet brine is making a saline solution and submerging your protein in that solution for a period of time before cooking, a dry brine is coating that protein with kosher salt on the surface of it and letting that protein sit, probably in the refrigerator, for a period of time before cooking. So it's somewhat of the same process. It works a little bit differently than a wet brine in the sense that you're not adding extra liquid into the protein, but what you're actually doing by dry brining is you're tricking the protein. Probably gives the protein a little too much credit. It can't really be tricked. But what you're actually doing is pulling moisture out of that protein, causing it to dissolve the salt on the surface of that protein. And then just like a wet brine, the protein says, wait a minute, there's an imbalance. I need to find equilibrium with the concentration of salt in my surrounding, the liquid around me, and it will start to pull that back in. It actually uses its own moisture and its own liquid to brine itself. And this can be used on any type of protein, really, that you can wet brine. So chicken or poultry or pork or beef, whatever. But the difference is you just sprinkle salt over the surface of it and then let it sit, preferably in the fridge if it's going to be more than, you know, half an hour. And ideally on a little rack over a dish. So if it does drip, it doesn't just sit there and, sit in its own juices, and it allows it to dry as the protein reabsorbs the liquid. But the key here, and what differentiates dry brining from just salting your protein, is the time. So just like wet brining takes some time to work, dry brining does as well. So if you've got a couple of boneless, skinless chicken breasts or pork chops, and you take some salt and you sprinkle it to cover the exterior all the way around, they're going to need, you know, probably 45 minutes to an hour or something like that, or maybe a couple hours even in the fridge for that entire cycle of pulling the moisture out, dissolving the salt, and reabsorbing to happen. If you were just to coat them with salt and throw them on the grill, for example, that's not brining, that's just seasoning and salting, and you're not going to get the benefit of that reabsorbed liquid as a buffer against drying out. Now, when it comes to dry brining, there's not a magic formula, there's not a magic amount of salt you use for item, but common sense would say, depending on the size and the surface area of whatever it is you're trying to dry brine, you might need more or less salt. So to go back to our tried and true example of the boneless, skinless chicken breasts, you know, one boneless, skinless chicken breast might take, a quarter teaspoon of kosher salt, not very much. Just, you know, you hold your hand up 6 inches, 8 inches, 10 inches, whatever, above, and you just sprinkle it so you get a good coating. I mean, we're not talking about a crust of salt. We're just talking about evenly seasoned all over that chicken breast. And then you allow that to sit for a period of time. If you're doing something like a whole chicken, same concept, you can salt inside the cavity as well. You want to make sure you get all the crevices, you know, so lift up the wings and make sure you're getting the salt sprinkled everywhere. And that's really all dry brining is. Now, you can put that in the fridge for however long you need to on that rack. And the other interesting benefit of dry brining is it will actually promote better browning, because as it brines, it will dry out more than, say, something you wet brine, obviously, which by definition is in a wet solution. The dry brine will actually promote better browning. So you might even be happier dry brining if you're going to do something like a roast where you want a nice brown crust all the way around. And dry brining, just like wet brining, will help your protein retain moisture and not dry out as much. And it won't be diluted like wet brining would be, where you're you're adding extra liquid and diluting down the flavor of the protein. Dry brining is not adding any additional moisture, but it still affects the muscle protein and fiber, like I mentioned, with wet brining. It will allow it to retain some moisture that it would ordinarily lose in dry, hot cooking methods. I mean, you might be thinking, it sounds a lot less messy than a wet brine, and it definitely is. So if you wanted to brine a turkey or a chicken, you know, you're going to have a large container. You're going to have room in a fridge somewhere or a lot of ice or something to keep it cold. Whereas, you know, if you want to dry brine a chicken or a turkey, you just need a rack and fridge space. You don't have to worry about sloshing, you know, contaminated water around the rest of the stuff in your fridge or whatever. So it's a lot less messy. And as far as time it takes to dry brine things, it's not terribly different from the timing I mentioned for the wet brine stuff. And in some cases, you can even let it dry brine a little bit longer. But again, I'll put links to some brining times in the show notes. But again, if we're just talking a couple of chicken breasts or a couple of pork chops, we're talking like 45 minutes to an hour. If you're talking something like a beef roast, that might be overnight or, you know, 8 to 12 hours or something like that, and anywhere in between for whatever it is you might be dry brining. Now, all that said, you're probably still wondering, is brining worth it? It sounds like a bit of work, and it can be. Wet brining, especially, a little bit more work than dry brining would be. But I would just say maybe give it a try and see how it works for you. Check out some of the recipes I'm going to put in the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/187. You might see something that catches your eye. And again, when I say recipes, I'm using air quotes and using that somewhat loosely because, as I mentioned, all the extra flavorings that you're going to find in some of these recipes are probably not all that necessary because they really won't impact the final flavor of your protein that much. But hey, you know, to each their own, and try it out. You might find something that really works well for you. But if you're looking for a way to help combat overdried, tough, chewy proteins when you're grilling or roasting or whatever, brining should definitely be something you take a look at. And like I said, if you're just brining for yourself or a couple of folks and you're using small cuts of protein, it really does not take that long. A lot of us think of turkey and brining overnight or 24 hours when we think of the Thanksgiving thing, but that's not really the case with pretty much everything else you're going to be grilling on a regular basis. So those are the basics of brining. I will get working on that marinade episode too, because I have a lot of things I want to talk about there. I've been really working on my jerk chicken marinade and perfecting that. I want to share it. So we'll get to that as well. All right, everybody. I hope that was interesting to you. If you're brand new to the concept of brining, I hope that provided a good foundation and a general understanding of what brining does and what it is. And you might be interested to head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/187 to check out some of the show notes and links to learn more. Anyway, that's going to do it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening along. I really appreciate it, as you know. I've been a bit busy as of late, so I've been a little bit slow on getting some of the episodes out, so I apologize for that. But I'm getting my schedule put together for the second half of 2021. Got some interviews coming up. I've got some Let's Cook episodes coming up. I've just got more stuff in the works in general, so you should see some more regular episodes coming out once again. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until next time, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.